Welcome, everybody, to the seventh episode of It's Totally Canon, our new podcast about a lot of things, but mostly about how nerdy we are. We proved that indubitably last week, and we will probably continue to do so. I'm JP Lobb, and I'm joined today by my co-host, as always, Kevin and Eamon in Philadelphia.
Hi, I'm Eamon.
I'm Philadelphia. Kevin!
So confusing.
And gentlemen, any old business from the comics discussion that you'd like to bring up?
Actually, yes. I know I shouted a few lines at you from Batman's death scene in Final Crisis, and because I love this scene so much, I wanted to give you a dramatic reading of it in its actuality.
Please do.
So, this is something that I've read to JP over the phone several times.
Romantically.
Romantically. Because it's such a wonderful scene. All right, this is just me giving you context. This isn't from the scene. Dateline, 2008. Ruler of Apocalypse, Darkseid, has marshaled his forces and taken over Earth, releasing the anti-life equation, enslaving everyone on Earth to Darkseid's will, or something. Our intrepid hero, Batman, having previously been captured by Darkseid, finds him. All right. Here we go, people. I wondered when you'd show yourself. Stop skulking in the shadows. Accept that the equation is proven. Come out. Embrace anti-life and behold. Darkseid, you look like I feel. You shouldn't have shot Orion. It was Orion's destiny to fall in final battle. Splintered like light through a prism in an infinite number of deaths. And on the way, he wounded you beyond repair, didn't he? A rotten carcass of a god, crawling into the sewer to die. I made a very solemn vow about firearms. But for you, I'm making a once-in-a-lifetime exception. A gun and a bullet, Darkseid. It was your idea. Radion, toxic to your kind. I sealed the bullet that killed Orion in my belt for inspection. But, do I make myself clear? Little man, can you outrace the Omega Sanction? The death that is life? Try me. Huh. Ah! Gotcha. And then Batman is dead.
I like the part where you're describing the death of Orion in Batman's belt. It sounded very convoluted.
Yeah. So if you want to know what that silliness was all about, pick up Final Crisis by Grant Morrison. And that is actually one of the scenes that makes a lot of sense.
The bullet that killed Orion in my belt. What was he doing in my belt? I'll never know.
It's actually the bullet was fired backwards through time. It's pretty silly.
Like most bullets.
I think it would be awesome if Orion's belt, the star constellation, was in actuality the entire time Batman's utility belt.
The galaxy is in Batman's utility belt.
At the end of Men in Black 3, it just pulls out and it's like, ah, it's Batman this time.
He's a ghost for some reason.
And actually, the Omega Sanction doesn't kill Batman, it just sends him back in time 10,000 years, and then he has to be a caveman and a pirate and all these other things. And that's in another book called Return of Bruce Wayne, so. Let's move on to another nerdy thing, namely JP going to a thing this weekend.
I did.
JP, how dare you go places? What's the matter with you?
I know.
You nerd.
I'm a big nerd. I went to PAX Prime, which is in Seattle, and it's the big video game convention.
Not that grunge music festival that you were talking about endlessly.
Harsh Realm, man.
No, sadly, this is not the same thing.
Did you take the Frasier reality tour?
Yes.
In which you are really Frasier? Even though you
oh,
are.
Really, dead stripper.
Even though you're very David Hyde Pierce-like,
yeah,
in real life.
They actually thought that I was David Hyde Pierce, and I had to sign some autographs. I just couldn't have the heart to tell them.
I loved you in Curtains! It's Curtains for this autograph. You sign it and then kill her with the autograph.
So anyway, that was PAX. No.
I hope you enjoyed JP's experience.
So what did you see there?
It was very cool.
Explain PAX to me, because I'm a newbie.
PAX is the Penny Arcade Expo. There's actually two incarnations of it. There's one, PAX Prime is in Seattle, and there's a PAX East that's held in Boston, and they alternate.
Like Spock Prime and Spock East in the
yeah.
Star Trek movie?
Yep. Pretty
much. Hey, Kirk, what are you talking? Hey, the Sox are going to win it this year. It's great. It's illogical to
Rigel
think that they won't win.
Rigel 5 is wicked cool.
Oh, man, he's...
The lithium crystals.
It's basically very focused on video games. It's run by the people who do Penny Arcade, the webcomic. And I have always wanted to go, and we're finally on the West Coast, so I thought, why not go up to Seattle for a weekend? And overall, it was very cool. I got to play a lot of games that aren't even released yet.
Are you allowed to talk? Did you have to sign a release saying that you wouldn't talk about them on your podcast? Your world-famous podcast.
So what'd you play?
One of the things I played was Spider-Man Edge of Time. Mm-hmm. Which was very cool. It's a sort of a time bending. It's like Spider-Man sort of mixed with Prince of Persia a little bit. Not really that much, but it's has a lot of time travel aspects to it, which I thought was pretty good.
Is it because he was hit with an Omega Sanction?
Maybe. I started playing in the middle of the game.
Oh man, it's going to be weird when the robber who shot Uncle Ben shot him with a time bullet, so Uncle Ben is not actually dead. With great power comes great traveling as a caveman.
Uncle Ben was sent back in time, and he's a caveman and a pirate.
Do people cosplay at this thing?
Oh my god, yes.
Did you cosplay at this thing? And if so, why not?
I cosplayed as myself.
J.P. Love as J.P. Love. In
the David Hyde Pierce story.
I saw a lot of Ghostbusters.
Right.
Oh, those things are always lousy with Ghostbusters.
I saw a lot of Yoshis. There was some Mario's.
Wait, were there like Yoshi's riding? Or like Mario's riding Yoshi's?
I don't know what happened after hours. I just know.
Where like the Mario's riding Yoshi is constantly bumping into things, and then the Yoshis would run around the floor for several hours and piss off Mario. So is there like does Penny Arcade Expo have like an S&M one?
It's still called PAX, but it's like PAXXX. It's also Pennsylvania's new initiative to get sexier. Tom Corbett's really, he's drilling for shale.
Man, is it hot in here or is it just my bulging muscles?
I'm gonna lift that tax on that ass.
Tax that ass, or don't tax it.
He's a Republican, he wouldn't tax it. I also wanted to bring up how much I thought you were going to a convention that celebrated the Kevin Spacey movie K-Pax, and I thought you went
Well, that was part of it.
Like, eating bananas.
Were people just eating bananas with the skin on all weekend?
With the banana skin on, not with human skin on. Right, the humans did have skin on while they were eating bananas, I assume.
Except for that one guy who was cosplaying as not having an epidermis.
He was in a lot of pain, but he got enough potassium for the day, so...
This was brought to you by the Banana Advisory Council.
Thanks a bunch, Banana Council. listen, guys, I think that this topic is ripe for discussion.
Oh! Kevin, I don't think this is very appealing.
Sorry, guys, this may have been a slip on my...
Guys, we gotta split.
All right, so continuing my attempt to not be extremely negative about things, it's another edition of Something Eamon Likes. Something Eamon Likes, because he hates stuff a lot, so he's going to talk about something he loves unequivocally. Something Eamon Likes.
Guitar solo! Bow!
This week I'm going to talk about something that I did not discuss with these fellows beforehand. This was a secret. I am here to discuss something we really haven't discussed that much on the podcast so far, and that is books. I would like to discuss one of my favorite contemporary authors, Tom Perrotta, who is the author of such books as Election, Little Children, The Wishbones, and The Abstinence Teacher. The one you probably have heard of from that bunch is Election, which was made into a movie with Ferris Bueller, Chris Klein,
Matthew Broderick.
Little Children was also a pretty big movie, I would assume.
I know, but like, Little Election's, but that's, you know, it's what made him. It's what the one that's been around for a while. But yeah, right. Little Children was awesome too. So anyway, the Election movie is my first exposure to him, and then I went back and read Election, and it's a wonderful book, and it's what inspired Election was the 1992 presidential elections. We had the crazy field of George Bush the first and Bill Clinton, wacky Ross Perot, who came in and like screwed things up a little bit. I forget. I don't remember. I was in like second grade. In the book, there's a girl who's like the overachiever. Really, this is all she wants. and then a teacher character who props up a male football player to kind of keep her from getting the presidency. The football player's jealous lesbian sister decides to run just to fuck with the process. And I really loved the book, and so I went and read his other books. His first novel was called The Wishbones, which is about a guy who's, like, in his 30s, and, you know, he's been dating a girl on and off for, like, 20 years, and his life's kind of a mess, and all he does, his job is to play in a wedding band called The Wishbones. He finally decides to marry this girl. He has an affair, and then he's maybe gonna join a Christian rock band just for the money. It reminds me a lot of Nick Hornby books. I would perhaps go so far as to call Tom Perrotta the American Nick Hornby and vice versa. And I just like his books a lot. We mentioned Little Children earlier, which was an Oscar-nominated movie that starred Kate Winslet and Night Owl and Rorschach from Watchmen. The thing I feel about Little Children, it's what I think American Beauty wanted to be. Kind of a look at the suburban middle class and complacency and blah,
listen,
blah, blah.
I won't have anybody badmouth the star of American Beauty and K-Pax, Kevin Spacey, with whom I share a first name.
Yeah, well, a lot of people in Little Children, like, eat bananas with the skins on as a tribute to K-Pax. Little Children also has a main character who is a, like, convicted pedophile who may or may not have killed a girl. So that's not something you find in a lot of books. So, like, you know, Tom Perrotta, it's not, like, high literature, it's not Jonathan Franzen's The Corrections, but, you know, they're nice, well-drawn world. It's, you know, usually middle-class suburban people. Then his most recent book, until this year, was The Abstinence Teacher, which is about a deadhead guy who gets away from being an alcoholic and drugs by becoming a born-again Christian, and a woman at a school who has to teach abstinence, even though she thinks it's stupid. And I didn't like that one as much. That came out in, I think, 2007. But he actually, what made me think about him is he has a new book that just came out, The Leftovers, which I ordered the other day, which is about the people who are left over after a rapture happens, because those Christian fellows are always going like, yep, God's gonna come and take away all the awesome people, straight train to heaven. This book is like, well, after those people are gone, who's going to be left? And this isn't some post-apocalyptic Left Behind thing.
It's funny? Is it a comedy?
I don't know. Well, I don't know, but I think it's just more, it's not like fantastic. It's just like a social drama with comedy. What would happen to those people? So I will report back on that. So if you want to check out a really awesome author who's, you know, really easy to read and it's fun, it's rewarding, and very insightful about contemporary America, I would suggest Tom Perrotta, author of The Wishbones, Election, Little Children, and The Abstinence Teacher. I would recommend Little Children, perhaps, the most. I think that's my favorite of his books. Election's also another good place to start. So that is Something Eamon Likes.
Well, gentlemen, I had a subject I wanted to talk about. I've been thinking about a lot lately, and that is the subject of television reboots. TV shows from yesteryear that TV executives look back on and say, you know, there is some a nostalgia factor here, and so we should update it and start anew.
Or in more cynical terms, TV development is really effing difficult. Let's just prey on something that might have a built-in audience.
That is also a valid
and hope people don't get mad. Because I think this year we have new Charlie's Angels coming out, ignoring the continuity of the Drew Barrymore, Lucy Liu, and Cameron Diaz versions.
Yeah, they also tried to reimagine Wonder Woman, which they had done in the 70s with Linda Carter. And
that didn't go.
They mercifully decided not to do that one.
It was like, it's Ally McBeal meets superheroes on a TV budget. You'll love it.
It's a dancing Wonder Baby.
So anyway, JP, what did you have in mind for a TV reboot?
Well, I have been thinking about it mostly because I've been thinking about Battlestar Galactica, which was probably the most successful TV reboot of the past couple years on regular cable.
Certainly the most gray.
Certainly the most gray, yes.
Reboot.
There's also Hawaii Five-0, which I guess could be considered a bigger commercial success, but in terms of
I think it can be considered a show that exists.
Are you suggesting that, like, Battlestar Galactica should have had more bikini shots?
I wish.
Well, they did have, they had Trisha Heffer.
It's time to go to the beach planet, guys.
Well, Star Trek does have a beach planet. What's it called? Rhesus? Regis?
But I have been thinking about things that I wish that networks would reboot or basic cable would reboot. And, you know, we had a spate of shows from the 80s back in the late 2000s. You know, there was Knight Rider and a bunch of other shows that NBC decided to bring back.
Bionic Woman.
So I thought it's time to go into the 90s. We got to start bringing back some intellectual property from the 90s. And the first thing I thought of that I wish would be rebooted is Sliders, which is a show that ran from 1996 to 2000 or something like that. And it originally was on Fox and starred
Jerry O'Connell
as theoretical physicist who discovered
Shut up. No, the show starred Sabrina Lloyd, and that's all anybody needs to know.
I was getting to that.
She's the only one on the show.
Just because she was on Sports Night.
Oh, she's adorable.
That was also a show.
It also had John Rhys Davies as Arturo, the professor.
Professor Arturo.
And it was a very fun show. It had a lot of great concepts. And
it was like the coolest thing ever when I was 10.
It was.
I have seasons 1 and 2 staring at me from DVD rack.
In the beginning, creatively, it was very strong. And just as it kept going on, it just got weaker and weaker.
Yeah, well, when they went to sci-fi and they had to like do story arcs. And then we had Mallory, who was like his weird sliding clone or something. Yep. But anyway, yeah, well, like, it's a show I'm afraid to go back and watch again because I have such wonderful memories of it as a child.
Yes. I've watched a couple episodes. I also own the first 3 seasons, and it does hold up fairly well, at least most of the episodes do. But I feel like it's very much of a product of its time, and it's had a very limited budget and a very limited effects budget, especially.
What? This dollar bill is red? We must be in communist world! Oh, no!
Exactly. So I feel like there's room for an upgrade of that concept, you know, going to other parallel universes. And you could have some kind of mystery element behind it. And there's also, of course, the element how they're going to get back.
So do you think they should do a more... You felt the show was stronger during its, like, sort of situation of the week era and weaker during the plot arc era, but...
I would say that as soon as they introduced the Cro-Mags, which is a race of alternate human...
Ape sliders, basically.
Ape sliders, right.
Who, which who sounds has... like a horrible new tiny hamburger.
Yes, do not eat the ape sliders.
As soon as they introduced that arc, it was pretty much all downhill. I'm not saying that the idea of an empire of trans-dimensional worlds and they're trying to conquer other alternate universes is a bad idea, but the way it was executed was terrible. Yeah. And basically, John Rhys Davies saw the writing on the wall and decided to get out of the show when he could.
The real problem was the switch to sci-fi.
That's certainly one interpretation. My feeling was it was a lot earlier, probably in the middle of the 3rd season.
What do you mean you didn't like his replacement character, the hot redhead Maggie?
Carrie Wuerher. She was okay.
And I remember, like, they did, like, a Species ripoff episode as soon as they had her in the cast.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, as an 11-year-old, I was like, oh, man, this is so sexy.
Go back and watch it and tell us if it's still sexy game.
It's 8 o'clock on a major network TV. They're definitely going to show nudity was how my brain worked back then. It's like, oh, man, she's taking off her dress and getting in a pool. This is hot stuff. Didn't get this when John Rhys Davies was on the show.
I feel like there's like a lot of room for some upgraded concepts and some nudity? more serious tone to the series, and I think they should do it. That's my biggest recommendation.
Yeah, like when you mentioned this topic to us, I've racked my brain, and I'm like, yeah, I would like to see a Sliders-type show again.
Along the same line as that, I'd like to also see a Quantum Leap reboot.
Oh, I would definitely like to see that.
A lot of the little arcs that they had were kind of nice. I especially liked the Evil Leaper.
Yeah, and they didn't really... That show, that's from an Aaron TV where you had maybe 5 episodes of the entire run had like different more dynamic thing or overarching story thing.
The Leap of the Week.
And, yeah, very few overriding story elements.
But they did explore a lot of the concepts that, you know, they kind of played with their own rules a little bit. And I always liked that about sci-fi shows. So I'd like to see that come back.
Yeah. So basically we want all the situation of the week sci-fi shows from when we were like 5 to 10 to come back.
Pretty much. One thing that I think would be a great challenge for anyone who wanted to reboot a series, and this is reaching a little bit further back, but what about Space 1999? And like have it in an alternate 1999.
Where things are awesome?
Where things are awesome.
But wouldn't it just, like, kind of end up being Homeboys from Outer Space? Or Homeboys in Outer Space, sorry.
Homeboys near Outer Space.
No, there were a lot of interesting concepts from that show. I watched a few episodes.
I've never seen it, so I really...
It was on the Sci-Fi Channel a little bit, and I watched it. I just like the idea of the underpinning of the show being an alternate 1999 where we could travel through space with ease. The premise of Space 1999 is that there's like a nuclear explosion on the moon, and the moon like exits orbit of Earth and just flies off into space.
What? That's ridiculous.
That's what it is.
What? That's silly.
And it's like the continuing adventures of the moon base. I'm not kidding you.
Wow.
So Earth 1999 is the moon? Like it was about the moon the whole time?
No, it was Space 1999.
Oh. Well, it wasn't space either. It was, you know, you're not floating in space. The moon is a solid physical thing.
Kevin, I'm not gonna argue with like linguistics with you here. It was called Space 1999. I know what I have to tell you.
What about Earth 2? Should we reboot that too?
Sure.
Do you remember
just
that
get
show?
It all in there?
Sequest, Deep Sea Voyage.
I want more talking dolphins on Earth.
Are there any like non sci-fi shows you'd like to see rebooted? I guess there's. I guess they don't even reboot those as much. It's usually the more high concept stuff.
Hawaii Five-0 is not a big sci-fi show.
What was
it? It isn't.
Hawaii Five-0.
Well, it's still. It's like, you know, yeah, you don't really do stuff that's not crime or sci-fi.
They could reboot the Rockford Files.
Well, they did try to reboot Dragnet with Al Bundy.
Yes, they did. Yeah.
And it is still running. I thought long and hard about this reboot thing, and what I would like to see rebooted is Star Trek in a hour-long episode format, because there was this big fraud-a-rawl about the new J.J. Abrams movie, and you get, like, 2 hours, and they're dragging their feet about making the sequel. Like, the thing about Star Trek is there's lots of it. You want an hour, you know, they did it. They proved that people would still be responsive to Star Trek and with recreating the roles. Please do an hour.
I debated whether I would want to see another Star Trek, and I mean,
you loved that movie.
Yes, I did.
Every time I go over your house, the Blu-ray is sitting in front of the television.
I don't think we're getting...
It may be because you put it there the last time.
I don't think we're getting high concept enough here. I'm thinking of a favorite show from the 80s that spawned an Academy Award winning actor. And I'm talking, of course, of the hit comedy Bosom Buddies. And why not reboot that as, like, a spy thriller where, you know, some modern day Tom Hanks and Peter What's-His-Face have to dress up as women, but go into these Charlie's Angels like situations.
What, you mean like White Chicks?
Yeah, kind of like White Chicks.
So it's Bosom Buddies, but... spin?
It's not... Well, the thing about White Chicks is that there were black men pretending to be white chicks, so I would imagine Tom Hanks having to pretend to be a black woman. Like, it has to be, like, a reverse here. Like, you can't have, like, Tom Hanks as a white chick. And
well, you know, in White Chicks, there was a, like, intrigue element to it. They were FBI agents, maybe? Anyway, yes, I greenlight your Bosom Buddies, but as Alias reboot.
I also greenlight it.
Not that I just want to have all the faux Alias shows, but how about, like, Josie and the Pussycats, where, like, Josie is... Maybe she's, like, a marketing executive, and she sends the Pussycats out to rock concerts saying, "You better rock their faces off!" And she, you know, she's known for having been in this band in the 70s. You know, it's like a meta thing. People are like, I know Josie from the 70s.
Is Live Nation the big bad?
Maybe they are. Maybe, like, Josie is trying to stop the Live Nation-Ticketmaster combination, and only her Pussycats can do this.
I will never approve of a Josie and the Pussycats reboot unless it's a Josie and the Pussycats in Outer Space reboot.
Now, Kevin, would you be picking up the continuity of the underrated cult movie that came out, like, in the late 90s?
You mean one of my favorite movies of all time, Josie and the Pussycats?
That has a good reputation.
It's a subversive little flick. Probably not. It would probably start based...
Would it be loosely based on the continuity of the original cartoon?
The original cartoon, yes.
But with humans?
Yes.
Do you think Colin Hanks would be a good fit for this property?
He could be the new Alan M. It would be great.
Who should be Josie, then?
Boy. Let's see. I mean, Molly Ringwald's already on a show, but I'm trying to think of, like, a little bit out-of-date redheads.
Lauren Ambrose?
Star of the hit BBC drama Torchwood. No, Alison Hannigan's still pretty young, and she's, like, intermittently a brunette at some points.
Yeah. She's, like, tan and brunette now. What the heck?
Yeah, that's a weird thing. She was pale and redheaded earlier. But, like, maybe, like... I don't know. I thought redheads and, like, Danny Bonaducci popped
up. Well, he can be from Live Nation.
Well, maybe, like, she battles other 70s TV rock families, like the Partridge Family.
Greenlit. I approve.
See, that's the thing. I think by sticking to science fiction, we're limiting ourselves. And, you know,
I should
really dig in. See the rich continuity of television, you know, that's out there.
I was going to suggest Marcia Cross because she'll be free soon.
Yes, maybe Marcia Cross.
But that would be terrible.
What about making K-Pax a TV series?
I think no one would want that. The original is so beloved and famous that how could you improve upon it or extend upon it? But, you know, you never know, like, what might be adapting something or rebooting something that could be awesome, because one of me and Kevin's favorite TV shows is Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which was a failed, unsuccessful movie that became a very well-regarded show. So, who knows? Maybe this Josie and the Pussycats, the next generation thing Kevin has going is...
Waiting for Josie and the Pussycats Voyager myself.
Or Josie and the Pussycats Deep Space Pussy. Oh! Zing!
Deep Space Feline, obviously.
Anyway, like, the thing that I thought about rebooting, and this was today prompted by the announcement of the Star Wars Sexology, Six Movie-ology is coming out.
Not the sex documentary about Star Wars, that's a different thing.
Is coming out on Blu-ray, and details of what did George Lucas change this time have leaked out. And he, like, gave Ewoks eyelids and pupils.
Where there shouldn't be eyelids and pupils.
Yeah, and he added a lot more nerds to when Darth Vader is throwing the Emperor into the pit at the end of Return of the Jedi. And it's just, and it's like, all
will he ever be done tweaking his masterpiece?
And like, most of the tweets are just completely...
Is that what he's calling it these days?
And it's all these, like, I mean, some of the things, like, the no, that's a pretty big thing, but a lot of it's just stuff that he keeps tweaking for no reason. And what I would really like to do is reboot the prequels. I would love to give them to J.J. Abrams, because Super 8 was such this love letter to the Spielberg films of the 80s and what have you in the 70s, mm-hmm. that he could replicate the aesthetic of the original Star Wars movies and tell a good story. I think every nerd has somehow written the prequels in their head, and it's nothing like what George Lucas did, and I would really like to see that story, but good.
So you heard it here first, folks. Eamon has endorsed something that he wants J.J. Abrams to do.
I do, so. Yeah. I thought about this. I'm like, you need to get someone who can... You have to use some CGI these days, but I want the puppets. George Lucas got rid of Puppet Yoda in Phantom Menace. So, fuck that noise. I want someone who's going to use matte paintings and puppets and guys in rubber suits stuff, and I want the sets to be real.
S&M outfits. Ball gags.
I want the...
Kevin, we are not on the sex documentary. Don't...
And so that is my wish. That's a movie franchise, but still. Do the prequels right. And, like, have the Clone Wars not be between robots and clones. Because guess what? No one cares, because that's just like playing a video game. No one's actually dying.
That's very true.
You need there to be more time between the prequels, because otherwise Obi-Wan's, like, 60 in A New Hope, and nope, he's not. And Anakin's, like, 40, and it's silly. And people wouldn't have forgotten the Jedis anyway. Oh, God.
Would anybody die of sadness in your movie or TV program?
In my version, Anakin cuts off Padme's head. And then Mila Kunis is like, oh, whatever, I guess I'm the queen now. Because Black Swan. It was perfect.
I think that while we're on the subject of reboots, why can't we get it together in America to reboot things which are currently airing? Like, the hit CBS drama The Good Wife could be spun off into something like The Better Wife. Like, The Best Wife.
Or The Bad Wife.
Ooh, that's... Maybe
she has, like, a robot clone.
Right, exactly.
That's, like, unprosecuting all her cases.
Maybe she has to, like, save her husband, not just in, like, the political sphere, but, like, against this robot clone of herself.
And Julianne Margulies could also play the bad wife. Like, she could have two series.
And yeah, that's more money for everybody, and we're all very happy.
Absolutely.
Alright, so a big thing that happened to America, nay, the world this summer, was the last Harry Potter movie came out. And joining us for this segment is our New York correspondent, Mark.
Hi, Mark. New York has been great, guys.
How's law school going?
It's,
Do you know what jurisprudence is yet?
Yeah.
Has anybody arrested you because of your terrorist-looking beard, by any chance? I'm just wondering.
If you see something, say something.
There are a lot of buildings and people up here.
If you see a beard, say a beard.
Shave lives. No, I got
it. It's just like Seinfeld imagined.
Law school would be.
What is the deal with the American law system?
Anyway, so we want to talk about Harry Potter because the last movie came out.
And we're all very big fans of the Harry Potter series.
No, you're not.
We've been following it for many years, from the books to the movies, and now to J.K. Rowling's Pottermore website, which I'm very excited about. I want to find out what
you are not excited about it.
So the movie that came out this year was
Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2.
Right.
So, Mark, how did you feel with this last movie? What's your big impression?
Well, it was good. I really enjoyed seeing it. Overall, I feel like had I not read the books, I would have not liked the films. And I can't imagine how you would have a lot of it. Every so often when I'm watching them, I try to imagine that I hadn't read the books, and I feel they're a bit rushed. There's a lot of things that I feel like I'm filling in my head. I can't point them out but if I watched again, I'd be able to say, like, if I didn't read the books, I would have no idea what is going on right now.
Yeah.
And there's so many...
different plot threads, you know, things that got left out.
Yeah, and
you lose kind of the tone and voice a lot in the movies.
Yeah.
But it's still, I always kind of looked at them as interesting visual addendums.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's cool to see the stuff happening.
And I also feel like a lot of times J.K. Rowling is not the best writer in the world. She did very good with Harry Potter, but I think there are things that actually work better in the films because her prose just doesn't do those things justice.
I read a lot of, like, pulp and detective dime novels, so
I'm
pretty forgiving on prose.
Fair enough.
Which is a thing about me, so I'm saying I had never heard... I've heard other people say that.
Well, I also, last week, lent you a copy of...
A Farewell to Arms.
I'm sure you've read through and now appreciate prose completely.
Yeah, are you as big a fan of A Farewell to Arms as I am the Harry Potter series, Eamon? Because I enjoy it a lot, and I imagine that you would enjoy Hemingway a lot.
Anyway, so the thing I really wanted to say... about Harry Potter 8, whatever is part 1, part 2 bullshit.
7.5.
Harry Potter 8, Boy Wizard Adventure.
Right.
End game. Was I didn't realize how much of the climax of this 7-book, many-year saga was predicated on wand logistics.
Yeah.
Because in the end, when Harry fights he who shall not be named, the only reason he defeats him is not because Harry is more pure of heart, or because he knew some spell, or he was a better wizard or something, or because they had some great tactical plan to take down Voldemort. It was because of some bullshit about how Dumbledore had, like, the best wand, and then Draco Malfoy disarmed him right before he died, but then Snape killed him, so Voldemort, blah, 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 Harry disarmed Draco at some point. And
for our,
like,
listeners, this is why Mark is becoming a lawyer, so he can learn property law, and if he ever loses his wand...
Possession is 9/10 of wand law.
Work at the Ministry of Magic!
Right.
So yeah, that was the thing, especially because this movie, it's half of the book. It's just so, like, at the end, like, after the battle where, like, a lot of people have died, we're at the end, Harry and Ron and Hermione are standing there being like, oh, this wand thing.
I also felt like some of the deaths weren't handled with enough justice, where it was just Harry looking over and go, there's somebody you care about.
I guess Lupin's dead now.
Yeah, well, see, that's in the book, he goes through the hall, and that was him, Lupin and Tonks is the one where it's just... they die off-screen in the book.
Right, exactly. But Harry comes upon them and finds them.
Shut up, listeners. Kevin has not read any of the Harry Potter books, and he was going to try and pretend.
I'm a big fan of genre fiction, and especially fantasy, and I always felt that Jo Rowling's... I thought that she did really well with incorporating the world of magic into the Muggle world, if you would. Like, listen, wizards don't have to have trains, but in this book they do, and this Industrial Revolution was very big in the world, and
Trains were very important. They were, like, if you never had seen a train before, you'd be like, wow, that thing's magic. I can get across the country. And it was like the magic wand of its day. So that's why I appreciate the books.
That sounds like some eighth grader's book report for someone who didn't read the book.
I've read the books. I've read them many times. I'm excited to read what Jo has to say on her new Pottermore website.
So, like, Dumbledore is on a train, and Draco Malfoy throws him off the train, but then Snape kills...
No ticket. Like, I remember when I was reading Order of the Phoenix and, like, reading about Dumbledore's army, in the back of my head, I just kept hearing the Elvis Costello song, Oliver's Army, over and over, and he just kept improvising lines about Ron.
My favorite song on that album is
Luna
Two Little Good. Muggles.
Yeah, it's... What's so funny about... No, I don't have a pun for that.
Mudbloods and understanding?
Yeah, there you go. Nicely done. That was a joke I would have made. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm going to speak a little bit. This was pointed out to me about the strange amount of anti-Semitism connected to the goblins. They've all got hook noses, and they're bankers, and their names are all things like Rosenberg. Have you noticed this?
I don't remember.
It's a little
name.
Weird.
I did. Well, we were in the theater, and Michelle noticed it much more prominently than I did. But then when she said something, I was like, yeah.
They were, like, carrying Leonard Cohen albums and, you know, watching Woody Allen films on their iPod.
Well, I don't know if I can let you into the vault. You know, Bellatrix, I need to see your wand. I mean,
listen, Hermione, you really have to put on this cloaking spell. You have to look as though you are Bellatrix Lestrange.
Jesus.
Christopher Columbus directed a few films. All of a sudden, he's Susan Sontag.
I think that marks Woody Allen always results in a Susan Sontag joke, and I like it.
I believe last time it was... I can't remember it now.
You made a Gloria Steinem joke.
A Gloria Steinem. I was very proud of that,
actually. Because on Friday night, before Mark left...
I did a Bill Cosby impression of him reading the first line of F. Scott Fitzgerald's The Great Gatsby.
I was actually one of the things
in my younger and more vulnerable days!
Go ahead.
Yes!
I was going to say, I was going to... try to get you to just read from literature doing that, and I was going to do any of the terrible impressions I do to get you to do that, and right. I didn't have to.
So anyway, the thing Harry Potter really bungled for me was not showing George dying, George Weasley, because that's the thing that really tugged my heart out when it happened in the book.
But all the same, in the films, Fred and George were never the big characters that they were in the books.
But I feel like their presence was there enough.
Do you feel like it would have been disproportionate to have a sudden George dying scene in the movie?
No.
I feel like it would have.
Yeah.
Honestly. I do.
I just slapped him and couldn't hear that.
I just snapped Damon out of existence.
With
the
his magic
for
train.
Me in the movies, and I never read the books, and I wonder if this is something that is much different in the movies than the books, but it seems like all adults in this movie are either evil, cowards, or incompetent in some way, and they pretty much leave it up to the kids to do everything. Is that not how it works? That's the impression that I got from watching the movies.
I see what you're saying, and I don't feel like it's exactly that way in the book, but especially after Dumbledore died, you got the feeling that one of the messages she was trying to send is that adults are often wrong, too, and can make awful, awful mistakes, even the ones you trust the most. And that's kind of an odd message to be sending in a kid's book.
That's a good point, JP. Because, well, the book is told from the perspective of these kids, and it's really weird that this very powerful, dark, Satan-like wizard is so effing focused on a boarding school. Hitler didn't die in a duel with, a 16-year-old kid in
Tier
a boarding
knowledge.
School.
Actually, bringing it back a little bit more to it, comparing it to the book, what were the Deathly Hallows a part of? What story?
The Tales of Beedle the Bard.
Yeah, that. I feel like that was a bigger deal in the book than it was in the movie.
Yeah, well, it's kind of hard to...
I forgot what the Deathly Hallows were.
Yeah, I did too, and I've read the book several times.
How could you? In the book, they really... it really made an impression on me that even though when I went to see the film, I felt like in the back of my mind they were already flowing. Like, I understood completely what the Deathly Hallows were. And so I didn't miss them in the movie because they were in the back of my mind.
I didn't miss them because they were in
the
back of my mind.
The end of the Harry Potter series is a big milestone for me. Michelle has made me go to see every movie since I've known her. And I walked out of the theater and I said, I'm free, finally. So I don't have to see them anymore.
I thought that you had, like, broken up with Michelle there for a second. Like, no!
No.
You're just like, oh man, I don't know how Harry Potter ends.
This relationship was based on Harry Potter for many years.
Mischief managed.
Anyway, well, the weird thing is I've had this conversation with, you know, we're like two guys.
Three guys.
Yeah, but we're more like just two guys.
We're more, well, we are actual Harry Potter fans who have read the books of the four of us here. And it's weird. Everyone is feeling really down now that it's all over.
Well, like I said to you, I was sitting in the theater and we found out that Snape's Patronus was a doe, just like Harry Potter's mom. And I was really moved. And I was like, that was really well done. And then I was thinking, what am I doing with my life? That this is this important to me.
Yeah.
At like, it was like 11 p.m. or something.
Well, I went by myself.
Don't worry, guys. I'm sure they'll reboot it in the next 10 years or so.
Could we talk a little bit about the progression of some of the younger actors and what your...
Oh, this is not going to go anywhere good.
How you feel about how these people have grown up. I mean, it's really cool that they
kept the same kids.
Yeah, I don't know how many... Yes. Are there other series where we've actually seen people grow as people and as actors?
No, not
yeah.
really.
Yeah, I feel like this Alan Rickman guy got a good future in front of him. Like, I had good thoughts for Richard Harris, but then, you know, something went off the tracks there.
Well, the real, real great achievement with these Harry Potter movies is it's the eight movies, and they've all been well-received. There's fairly faithful adaptations. You kept the same cast except for Richard Harris, because he died. And they had to pick these unknown kids, and they made it to the end.
Yeah, they did.
So, you know, that's a big tip of the hat, because we haven't really had a movie series like that. Because, you know, James Bond has gone through, like, 40, 50 movies, and it's sometimes a different guy. It's no continuity, really.
Like, we're impressed by this now, but when...
Harry Potter will return in Moonraker.
But at the beginning of the series, how terrifying would those contracts have been? If you were that kid's parents, you know...
They were only signed up for, I think, three or four.
Three or four?
Yeah.
Okay.
And there was once a plan to switch actors midway through, but...
So it would have been like
that was abandoned. Yeah.
The upcoming Spy Kids 4, where Harry would come back and visit.
No, there would be. They wouldn't like change the cast. They would just change the actors.
Right. Okay. But
Spy Kids 4 keeps continuity with Spy Kids 3.
Okay. So we can
the older kids are going to come back.
Are you bringing out your cannon hammer? And
like I saw the little boy in the trailer.
I see.
And I think.
Alexis Vega, probably.
Yeah, she's in it. I looked at Wikipedia. She is in the cast.
I see.
I would just like to mention, because I've mentioned this to Kevin, it's a neat little family connection. My Uncle John, who's a pretty cool guy and was in the Philadelphia theater scene in the 70s, is good friends with Robert Morse of Mad Men fame, and went to see Daniel Radcliffe in How to Succeed in Business on Broadway with Robert Morse, and was able to go back on stage with him because Robert Morse originated the part.
Oh, we can top that, JP.
We can.
So me and JP in the late 90s, early 00s, went to the Young Performers Theater Camp, which runs out of Center City, Philadelphia. And JP's dad, who is a guy who goes up to Broadway like every other day, he went to see How to Succeed in Business with Daniel Radcliffe. Yesterday, me and JP were talking online. He's like, Amy, do you remember the last name of this girl who we did the show with? And I did some detective work, and we figured out that this girl named Rose something.
Rose Hemingway.
Well, she's now Rose Hemingway. We knew her as like Rose Sesniak. We did Fame with her, and now she is on Broadway playing opposite Daniel Radcliffe. So,
oh, neat.
Boom.
Well, Robert,
we win.
Robert Morse has.
We don't actually remember her, but
Robert Morse has logged onto Facebook so many times on my uncle's computer that it automatically logs onto his page. So that's something that's pretty neat. Robert Morse and my Uncle John are genuinely friends, and he has logged onto Facebook a few times from my uncle's computer. Mm-hmm. So whenever my uncle opens up Facebook...
Are they roommates?
No, I don't know how
Robert Morse doesn't have Facebook.
He does. Look it up. My uncle has actually friended people because Robert Morse doesn't really care too much about his Facebook page. I've seen it happen.
Is this like how Eamon created a Facebook page for which actor, Eamon?
Patrick Warburton.
Patrick Warburton, because he didn't want to.
Well, that was before, like, people actually, you know, you could still get away with that back then.
I'm not really.
Anyway, so, Harry Potter!
I feel like the kid actor who is going to have the best career is the kid who plays Ron.
He was the most enjoyable
for me to watch.
I think Radcliffe, he's only going to get the new theater.
I think that's good for him, though.
Emma Watson, I think I've read an interview with her in, like, GQ.
Isn't she starring in the, like...
Importance of Being a World...
Yeah, we're talking about Mark's favorite books here, and the importance of being a what is it?
The perks of being. You're talking about the importance.
See, Mark knows the book so well that he. Mark knows the proper title because he's.
I've heard of this delightful little band called Nirvana.
Right, and it's his Emma Watson is going to be in it.
So well, Emma Watson in the interview is complaining about how rich and famous she is. And
I do that all the time.
Come on, man. You know how many people would have loved to play Hermione?
And she gets to go to Brown just because she's Hermione.
And she cut her hair short. Nobody yelled at her.
And
yeah, that's a stupid haircut.
And she looks super androgynous now.
Yeah, it's not... I'm sorry to, you know, I hate to objectify women, but...
you don't hate.
Wait,
that,
no, this is no. We're gonna time out. Sir, I'm all for the surfboards. That's fine.
That's still time out.
But
yeah, time in. I am fine with that, Eamon. I'll go toe to toe with you. I think about.
Yeah. I could.
I think we argue about this daily.
I can appreciate it, but you know, Hermione.
There was nothing in the book that said Hermione had to have boobs. No.
Wait, I was probably texting during the last move, the weird blonde.
Luna Lovegood.
Of course. Lovegood. Yeah, exactly. How were her breasts as I was texting?
All of these people are over 18.
I don't know if Luna Lovegood
is. No, she is.
Okay.
And the guy who plays Neville Longbottom looks like a young Clive Owen. Mm-hmm.
I guess he does. Right, let's objectify the men as well.
I've seen Daniel Radcliffe's penis.
We all have.
I actually haven't, but I imagine it'd be pretty chiseled, because that looks like a fine piece of man meat.
Chiseled?
I don't know.
I think anybody's ever used the word chisel. That sounds painful.
My chiseled penis.
Listen, how do you think David felt when Michelangelo was there? Was it Michelangelo? I forgot. One of the Ninja Turtles.
Yes, because he was the sculptor, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who was the party dude?
Donatello did machines, I know that.
And this is the first time ever that a bunch of nerdy guys talking about the great masters of yesteryear then dovetailed into a conversation about the Ninja Turtles.
Yes.
So basically, it's our knowledge of the Ninja Turtles that gives us the authority to objectify women.
Yes.
Wait, I'm just going to bring this up. Everybody's like, yeah, it's great. Same kids in all the movies. Is there a similar book series that, if you guys were trying to replicate the formula, if you were to say...
Everyone is trying to replicate the formula.
Well, right, but is there one that you could pull out of your hat right now and be like, I think I could make this into the thing?
What about the Dark Shadows thing? Have they made movies out of that?
They have, but
Dark Shadows, yeah.
Right, but it's not like a book
series.
It's
not a kid's book series.
Wait, well, what am I thinking of then?
You're thinking of his Dark Materials.
That's it.
Yeah.
Right.
Dark
Sorry,
Materials.
Sorry, Barnabas Collins.
Well, Dark Materials, they did make the first one in that, but it did not go over well.
Do you think, like, when Harry Potter 7 Part 2 came out, that the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe movies were just like, fuck, you know, like off in the corner somewhere, like, I can't believe this
well,
is
see,
the
that's,
one.
There's not
but
as...
the Voyage of the Dawn Treader was so good!
Well, no, I think there's not as much of a narrative through line in those books. Mm-hmm. It's not always the same kids, and sometimes there's like 10,000 years between books.
What about the Ender's Game series?
That's I was going to really... say that.
So they won't have you played your Orson Scott card, Mark.
Well, I know Orson Scott Card has been jonesing for like a good adaptation of that for a while, but
I hear he's kind of a dick. I hear that's a lot of the reason why.
Yeah, he's kind of also kind of crazy.
Yeah, right. So I think that might, you know, his personality might be.
But I don't think there's really an analogous series. So
analogous.
That sounds
series.
Like a great album name. Serious. Analogous.
I am analogous.
Oh, it's me, Analogous, here for your new book series. Analogous is the star of my new book series. She is a typewriter manufacturer.
A typewriter with wings.
She's a typewriter who's also a typewriter manufacturer.
She's a copywriter who really... She was like bitten by a radioactive typewriter, and Robert Morse was like helping her succeed in business.
How to succeed in business without really typing?
You have to have it in your chest, Roger.
Anyway, Harry Potter.
Yes, that's Harry Potter.
I loved it.
Hermione should be stacked. I'm just.
JP, I want to know if
Ron should be stacked.
If you noticed early on in the movie when they're in Gringotts and they're all falling from somewhere. And Hermione does some kind of spell where they don't hit the ground.
Yes.
Because she's her. And the camera stops, or they stop, and Hermione's boobs are right there at the camera. Did anybody else notice this?
No.
Because Eamon didn't. It was the first thing I saw.
I did a lot of texting during the movie, so...
You did not watch the movie.
Are you texting about how much you loved it?
I was. I was saying, this is so good, and I was sending it to...
A fellow Harry Potter fan?
You were like, exactly. Needs more trains.
Well, that's the thing. It was so crowded at the midnight showing that my friends and I couldn't all get in the same theater.
And your big, bushy Hagrid beard was...
Which is a different, because we all went as Hufflepuffs, and, you know, it was... Well, actually, no, he was a Snifflegriff. But he was in a different theater, and I was like... Joe, you're really gonna love this. I was talking to your dad actually.
Joe loves Snifflegriff.
Snifflegriff.
I want to be in Ravenclaw.
So that's the fake school name that I wanted to get in there. Snifflegriff.
Snifflegriff.
Sounds disgusting.
All of them sound disgusting.
They're the nerds that no one likes. Like, they're all like the gross nerds.
They're like the ones who are talking about the importance of being a wallflower. That's like how unpopular they are. They're off. Oh, what's the band name? There's a band that like
the Strokes.
No, the guys from Pulp were them in the movie. It was like,
oh, what's the?
I'm gonna make up a name.
I think we're about to prove how cool we are by not remembering. The Weird Sisters?
I wanted to say the Weird. Yeah, that sounds right.
Is that
to
it?
Me.
Yeah, I think. Yeah. I think it was some sort of Macbeth reference.
Keep on talking. I'm going to Google this.
I'm saying that the kids in Snifflegriff are so cool and outsidery that they're all listening to the Weird Sisters over in the corner and talking about how...
But everyone loves the Weird Sisters.
But right, they're talking about how their first albums were the better ones.
No, they're talking about it as though nobody's heard of them, and they are writing in their diary about it. No, they're writing letters to JP's dad, Joe. This is... Kevin and Snifflegriff.
They don't do very well at Quidditch, but they do well at emo trivia. The thing is like, 4 points for Snifflegriff.
But they're like too cool for points, though, so.
Yeah, JP, yeah, they reject the points.
JP, can your dad play the ghost who haunts the Snifflegriff house? Like the original Snifflegriff?
Right, then he could star in that children's book that we talked about, Boo Can't Sleep. Joe Love is Boo, and Boo Can't Sleep. No, I actually think Boo Can't Sleep would be, like, no, this is the book series that I'm pitching. Boo Can't Sleep because he's afraid of, like, other monsters, even though he's a ghost.
Yeah, that sounds like an actual kid's book.
Yeah, so I'm going to cast a child, and they're going to play this...
You're going to murder the child?
No, they're just going to play this role all the way through adulthood. Like, J.K. Rowling thought that she was really getting on the train by, like, starting... Okay, this is going to be children's lit, and then it will eventually grow more advanced. I'm going to start with a picture book. It's going to be Boo Can't Sleep, and eventually it's going to be all about Boo.
And then at the end, it's going to be like...
You're going to cry at the end. It's going to be rough. Like, when Boo is standing he's, like, 30 years old and standing at his own grave, it's gonna be rough.
It's been there for many years.
And he married his friend, the werewolf's sister.
And then, finally, at the very end, the priest is there, and he's like, finally, Boo can sleep.
I would cry at the end of that movie, if you've been watching it for 23 years. It's gonna be a lot like...
23 years?
No, I'm starting young.
It's a very conceptual movie.
Yes.
So it'll actually last 23 years. The whole movie.
It's a lot like Synecdoche, New York.
Right, exactly. I will be constructing the story of Boo the Ghost for way longer than anybody will be watching it.
A lot of it's just footage of you writing.
And getting scared of what you're putting down.
Right.
Oh, no!
That's the thing. It'll eventually become a metatextual piece where I'm afraid of the story I'm telling, and I will have to be inspired by Boo and, you know, to finish the series. And there will be a movie about that in which I will play myself, and the kid who I cast as Boo in, like, the adaptation of the picture book will be probably 19 at that point.
Could the very last film feature Boo about to put his head down on a pillow, and then it cuts to, like, your pencil, and it breaks, and close up on your face, and you say, I can't do it. That screen goes black.
Exactly. I appear in the piece, and I was like, Boo, I can't kill you. And then I go
back. But he's a ghost!
Well, that's what makes it... Boo gets very disappointed, because I can't kill him, but he's a ghost. So he's already done.
Well, as we've established in an earlier episode of the podcast, explosions can kill ghosts. So,
if you know your ghost fiction, you'll be very pleased. Read the books! Good night.
Well, thank you, everybody, for listening in on episode 7. And we had a kind of a grab bag of concepts today.
And an unanticipated rant about Star Wars.
And as much as a listening to this podcast can consider a rant about Star Wars unexpected.
And let us know if you have any suggestions for reboots. We'd love to hear them and discuss them on the next podcast.
And I'd like to give a special shout out to our New York correspondent, Mark, who was kind enough to join us this evening.
Thank you, Mark.
JB, what do we have coming up next week?
Oh, well, next week, I don't remember what we had up next week.
Tune in anyway. Goodbye, everyone.
We had to reboot this podcast.